You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramil, the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to follow the show, if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your next order. The Miami Heat defeated the Minnesota Timberwolves 121-112 on Friday night. I'll talk a little bit about the game, but mostly some key performances there that really stood out and a couple of off-the-court things that really manifested from that game. And also kind of talk a little bit about the upcoming Eastern Conference playoff race, because a lot of Heat fans are getting a little bit ahead of themselves. And it's pretty good to see, to be honest with you. Cocky Heat fan is a rare and incredible thing to witness. It's just, when you have it, when Heat fans are at their best, their most cocky, there can be no stopping them. Like, they believe that they're unstoppable. And it's pretty impressive, which is why I'll talk about which of the three teams at the top of the Eastern Conference might be the best matchup for Miami. Because according to Heat fans, all three of them are going to be beaten easily by Miami. So nothing like a big win over a floundering Minnesota Timberwolves team to have everybody really kind of exceed expectations for this season. I just love the constant fluctuation. This isn't a critical thing. It really is. It's from a kind of perspective of watching how everybody goes up and down depending on one performance. It's pretty impressive. But the one performance that really did stand out on Friday night was Tyler Hero. Sporting a new and questionable haircut, Tyler Hero was absolutely ridiculously on fire. 10 of 13 from the floor, 6 of 8 from three-point range, 27 points off the bench in 29 minutes. And it seemed like one of those performances, like Klay Thompson-esque, especially from three-point range, where he didn't even have to put the ball down. He didn't have to create space. He was just catching and shooting. And an incredible kind of rhythm. Like, that's not the strength of his game. We know that. He's not a catch-and-shoot type player. He creates off the bounce. Normally, that wasn't the case on Friday. He was just in a rhythm. He bounced back from injury after missing a couple of games due to a lingering foot injury. He looked healthy. He looked ready. He spoke after the game about how he felt like he wanted to contribute to a meaningful game. Looking forward to the upcoming matchup against the Boston Celtics, a two-game set that splits over Sunday. By the time you're hearing this, probably later on this afternoon, a 1 o'clock tip-off against the Boston Celtics, and then later on in the week on Tuesday. Both games critical. Miami fully aware of how important these games are. And I think for Tyler, what I like best about his post-game presser was how he was asked, you know, whether or not the matchups with Boston were of particular personal importance, considering he had some personal success against them in the Orlando bubble last season. And he said, you know, last season was last season. He's not worried about it. He's not thinking about it. It has nothing to do with whatever he was able to accomplish in Orlando. That's good perspective there. Like, you don't really see that in young players, certainly not in 21-year-olds, but a guy like Tyler seems to be aware of putting all that stuff in the rearview mirror. He's been, and I've been pretty consistent about this, like his answers regarding his role off the bench or what his expectations for himself this season are and things of that sort. Like, he knows he can be great. And I think at the same time, he is absolutely a confident player, as you have to be in order to reach this level. Even a guy like Duncan Robinson, who's known for his quote-unquote imposter syndrome, you know, very confident as a player. You cannot get to this level without having incredible confidence, so to the point of what most people would label arrogance. But I think it's also a very necessary function in order to become an NBA player. But for Tyler, that perspective, that kind of self-awareness, pretty impressive for a young player. Jimmy Butler was pretty impressed, that's for sure, because when he spoke after the game, he said that if Goran and Tyler are playing at the level that they did on Friday night, and Goran had a phenomenal game as well, 10 of 18 from the floor for 23 points, active, getting past Ricky Rubio, creating his shot, looking to get others going to finish with 3 assists, but just a very solid overall game from him. And when both of them are playing this well, according to Jimmy, they can't beat anybody in the Eastern Conference. This is what he says. He thinks they're good enough to hold their own against anybody in the Eastern Conference. And I think this kind of carries over from my point from last year's NBA Finals that, yes, on paper, the Lakers had more top-end talent, right? Top two players in a series. LeBron James, Anthony Davis, flip them in whatever order you prefer. And even that's questionable. But let's say for the sake of all the argument that I'm trying to make here, LeBron and AD are the top. Jimmy, Bam, I think pretty clearly 3 and 4 if they're healthy, when Bam was not, as far as overall talent, as rankings. But the point that I made then, and I continue to make now, is that when you have a player like Goran or like Tyler, who can step up and does and did during the Orlando bubble, where they can have the kind of performances that we saw on Friday night against the Timberwolves, that player is capable of leapfrogging into the top five conversation as far as the most talented players in a series. That's why you like a matchup against the Nets. Yes, they have Kyrie, Harden, and Durant. Right there, three very talented players, with the exception of Irving, and Irving is a hell of a scorer, capable of incredible shooting, but because of his defensive issues, he cannot be the most talented player on the floor. Like, I mean, you can probably make that same argument for, you know, Bam Adebayo. Bam, a hell of a defender, maybe not necessarily the most aggressive scorer. But I think if you look into a series with, let's say, Brooklyn, and you look at Durant and Harden, I think would probably be viewed as the top two players there. And again, in terms of total talent ranking, with Jimmy and Bam following, and then maybe making a case for Kyrie as the fifth most player, the fifth best player, fifth most talented player, whatever that term might mean for you. And then you look at a Goran Dragic or a Tyler Hero who can have those kind of performances that we saw last night. And yeah, maybe you could make this point about any NBA player, but I don't think most NBA players are capable of doing it as consistently as we've seen Goran and Tyler do it. Certainly not as consistently as they were doing it in the playoffs. And when you have those kind of individual performances, even you could throw Duncan in there. That throws everything off. Yeah, maybe a Joe Harris could change the calculus in Brooklyn's favor, for sure. But I think overall, you're more liable to see a big game from a Duncan Robinson than you are a Harris or any of the other role players in Brooklyn. Why? Because they have to defer to their big three. We've seen that for years here in Miami. It's a rare instance when Miami's egalitarian offense probably benefits them a lot more than it would other teams. They don't have to worry about, you know, deferring to their superstars. Or yeah, certainly they'll only go as far as Jimmy and Bam will take them, but they certainly could use the boost in a way that Brooklyn's roster does not. I don't know. It's kind of subjective, I suppose. My feeling is that Miami will figure it out. I'll talk about that in the last segment. Next segment, I want to kind of get into some comments that Jimmy Butler was overheard making to Carl Anthony Towns in Friday's win. Not the best look, perhaps, for your superstar, but I don't think it's being, I don't think it's quite as egregious as people are making it seem. But again, I'll talk about that in the next segment. You're listening to Locked On Heat. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Basketball season is going in full swing. Baseball season also moving forward. You can track all the action for both sports at BetOnline, but there's tons of sports action. With the start of the new WNBA season, the NHL, and much, much more, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or your mobile device. You can check out all the latest sporting news, sign-up bonuses, contest information, and so much more. Just don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Again, head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. So the video's been making the rounds on Twitter. If you haven't seen it, that's probably not really worth your while. Just because of the nature of the smaller crowds, you can hear a lot more crowd noise. I'm sorry, a lot more noise on the court than you normally could, especially some very colorful trash talking that took place in Friday's win. Jimmy Butler just had some really choice words for Carl Anthony Towns. Not great, but you know, Carl Anthony was having his way with Miami pretty much. He was looking aggressive and not as well as D'Angelo Russell was, but Carl Anthony Towns was certainly having a big game against Miami, and Jimmy Butler let him know that he didn't really like some of the things he was doing. And you can pretty much look, we've seen Jimmy talk to everybody on that Minnesota Timberwolves roster, Andrew Wiggins, almost anybody that was on that roster has had nothing but positive things to say about Jimmy, except for one. So we know now, I guess, what everybody has long theorized the problem was with Cat and not necessarily with Wiggins or anything like that. Like, I mean, I know Butler, and I had asked him about this when he was in Minnesota. He had respect for Wiggins and his talent. He just questioned his work ethic, which I think you can still question that even today. But he certainly questioned it with Karl Anthony Towns. And, it seems like a lot of that tension is still boiling over even a couple seasons later. Three seasons later. Like, they have not played together in a long time. He spent that whole season with Philadelphia. He spent last year with Miami, almost all of this season, too. And still, he does not like Karl Anthony Towns. And Anthony Towns responded to Jimmy by saying, call Rachel Nichols. So apparently still stemming from that same incident where Jimmy used the media to his benefit to force his way out of Minnesota. He called Rachel, gave her the scoop, told her all about the practice and everything else, and played the media game as well as anybody did, and forced their hand, and yes, it worked. He got to Philadelphia, made the playoffs with them, and Minnesota's been floundering ever since, so I don't know. Was it the right thing to do? That's debatable, but it worked for Jimmy. It's worked for Philadelphia. It worked for Miami. It hasn't worked for Minnesota, which is probably why he was trying to leave Minnesota in the first place. Like, it's just a poorly run franchise. You know, Ryan Saunders is head coach there, and you can debate whether or not he was the right choice to hire in the first place, but it didn't quite work out there. They didn't give him a lot of chance. You know, it's just, it's so weird when you look at other teams. I cannot relate to that. I've been a Heat fan for so long. I've covered the team for almost a decade. And you look at what this franchise has done in terms of stability and coaching and the right moves and everything else. Like, even when they're at their lowest, right? Even when they're going 10-31, it's like, oof, this is abysmal. And then somehow they flip it around. And then you start to see, well, you know what? Maybe Deion Waiters is a pretty good player. Goran Dragic, certainly a very good player. You've got some nice young players. And Josh Richardson, Justin Pizzolatto, you know, the jury is still out even 4 years later. But they had some nice things going there, and they were able to tie together. And I think, moreover, Eric Spoelstra kept the team engaged. Like, one of the things, I know, look, right now, that seems like ancient history. The longstanding point that everybody brings up about 41-41 is that it didn't let Miami tank appropriately so that they could get a top pick, and they certainly didn't make the playoffs that year either, so there was really no point in that season at all. And then, of course, they wound up just bringing back players like James Johnson and Deion and signing Kelly Olynyk and things of that sort. But what gets overlooked in that, and what should really get much more credit, is Eric Spoelstra. You know how hard it is for a coach to try and keep a team engaged at 11-30, right? I mean, that is ridiculous. 11-30. I've seen teams that were much, much better and just completely lose it. Have no faith in their coach, have no faith in the system, just fall apart. And somehow that didn't happen. You've got to give credit to Spo for him to be able to turn around and do a complete 180 from 11-30 to 30-11 is as impressive a coaching feat as ever has happened in NBA history. We've never seen it. Like, Chris Finch, the new Timberwolves head coach, getting some credit for turning around Minnesota and having them play well. Certainly not Eric Spoelstrian levels of wellness. You know, I just, it's really, really impressive. To the Jimmy point, and I'll just kind of wrap it up here. Look, a lot of shit gets talked in the NBA. A lot of it. I don't think right now Timberwolves fans are critical, they're bitter, they're upset at Jimmy, and maybe for good reason. I don't think it wasn't a personal attack in the sense that he didn't, the critical point that Timberwolves fans are making is that Jimmy should not have been attacking Karl Anthony Towns because of the personal tragedies that he suffered. And I completely agree with that. But I also think Jimmy did not attack him. And he did not bring up those personal tragedies. He just had the same fire he always has, one that he's not seen from Karl Anthony, and one that he just resents that guy for some reason. Like, they're just people that you don't like, and I don't think he likes Cat. I really don't, and I think they didn't work well together. They butted heads. There was a conflict there almost immediately. And look, Karl Anthony Towns is an immensely talented player, but I think he's just a shitty leader. Like, he might just be too talented too early on and asked to do too much. at a point in time when he wasn't ready. There are very few players that exude that kind of natural confidence to be able to carry a team. And they have to have the right place, the right system in place, the right coaching, the right veterans. You know, you bring in a young guy as talented as Cat was and have him take over a team and then expect him to turn things around, it's not going to happen right away. You know, and again, you have to have stability. You have to have normalcy there. You have to have something for them to kind of say, okay, well, I can fall back on this. Whereas, you know, that's where you have veteran players on that roster to kind of help keep them in check. You look even to like LeBron James, and LeBron is, we're talking a generational talent, as good a player as ever been in the NBA. And he still wasn't the leader of that team. Statistically, he might have been, but early on, 2003, he was not the leader of that team. He had to learn from veterans. He had to kind of grow and evolve and eventually became that. Towns has not made that evolution. He just hasn't. And so I think Jimmy's point, probably a right one. So it's an ugly look, baby. I think Jimmy's an immensely likable player. At least from my perspective, I love watching his style of play. I love watching him succeed in Miami. I love talking to him on a personal basis in the locker room and via Zoom calls now. And I don't have a problem with Jimmy Butler whatsoever. I know Minnesota fans don't necessarily agree to that, but I think they're just in a bad place considering the fact that their team has been losing and has been losing a lot for a long, long time, with the exception of one season under which Jimmy Butler led them to the playoffs. After that, they haven't had any success. Before that, they hadn't had much success either. It's just weird. It's an ugly franchise as far as how it's run and everything else. And look, Wolves fans, and I know a lot of them that are great media people and everything else, and they love their team. They really do. But there's frustration there, and rightfully so. Things have been mismanaged there for a long, long time. And I've brought it up many times over the course of this season. I feel like it's necessary for me to continue to reinforce this. Heat fans are immeasurably lucky to have the stability of this Miami Heat franchise. You will not find us anywhere else in sports. During the worst points of this season, last season, the year before last, and anything else, think of the lowest that this team has been, 11-30 over the last, 15 years, 25 years of Pat Riley's tenure. Yeah, there was the 15-67 season in 2008. I remember that. 2007-8, whatever. That was a low point, certainly. 11-30, I think, was lower because there was nobody on that roster. You still had Shaq on that roster. You still had a young Dwayne Wade on that roster. You made a trade for Shaq in the offseason. Yeah, whatever. Things happen. But as far as the 11-30, that was certainly the lowest point in Heat franchise history. Dwayne leaves. You've got Goran there as your de facto leader. You've got Dion Waiters, James Johnson, Derek Williams, on and on and on. And yet, again, things were turned around. The contrast between that and other teams around the league, 11-30, that's a typical start to a Minnesota Timberwolves season or an Orlando Magic season for a long, long time. Steve Clifford has done a phenomenal job coaching them and getting the most out of that talent. And look, they were a talented team, and they suffered so many injuries this year that they blew it up. And now they're tough to watch. But look at other teams around the league. I mean, just other teams that have not won consistently for a long, long time. Everybody wants to talk about the damn New York Knicks. And New York Knicks have been a shite team for a long, long time. They've been really, 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 really bad. I don't think you need me to tell you that, but they're a potential matchup for Miami. I think Miami still winds up slipping into the fourth or fifth seed, and if that's the case, they'll probably wind up facing either the Hawks or the Knicks. So that's currently how it stacks up. I think a Knicks matchup would certainly behoove Miami. Atlanta, a tougher matchup for the Heat, I think, given their perimeter shooting and everything else. But Miami can still win a series against the Hawks. I think they'd be clearly favored, but what about the top three teams in the Eastern Conference? Is there an ideal matchup there for the Heat? Because a lot of you seem to think that there is. I'm not so sure, but I'll talk about that in the next segment here on Locked On Heat. But before I do that, just a reminder that Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. Make sure that you go and check it out. If you haven't tried any of their 9 delicious flavors, you're absolutely doing yourself a disservice. Coconut, almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, and many more. There's something for everyone. More of the flavors have all the protein you're looking for, low calories, just a few grams of sugar. They've got all the right blend of nutrients, vitamins, everything that you're looking for. And moreover, great taste. They're all covered in 100% chocolate. And you can build your own box. You can give a box of chocolate bars to your mom for Mother's Day. Who doesn't love to get that? I know my mom certainly does. So if you go to BuiltBar.com right now and use the promo code LOCKED15, you'll get 15% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with a Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. You know, this is, I'll admit, admittedly, a very flimsy topic for a third segment here, but I just love seeing the exchange from Cocky Heat fan. You know, which top three team is the best matchup? It doesn't matter. We're going to beat all of them. Maybe. And I've made that point before. Everybody listening to this podcast probably is well aware that I think Miami has as good a chance as any of knocking off any of the top three teams. I just don't know I'm necessarily going to go looking for trouble, right? I mean, you can find a way to persevere over trouble when it finds you. You don't necessarily go out of your way looking for it, which is, I think, the fine line that a lot of you are more than willing to cross. But look, let's realistically take into consideration the possibility that a first-round matchup might result in a series, against the 76ers, Bucks, or Nets. Right now, they're all neck and neck. The Sixers have a pretty comfortable lead over the Bucks and Nets, so it looks like they'll probably hold off on the one seed. And that's unfortunate because I actually think that's the team that Miami matches up with best. An eight seed, which is what Miami would need in order to take on the 76ers, would result in that series taking place. And I just, Miami would have to not just slip into the play-in tournament, they'd have to lose the first game of the play-in tournament, and they'd have to beat the winner of the 9-10 matchup. That seems like a hell of a road just to wind up getting the series against the Sixers. And the reason why I think it's the best matchup for Miami is because I don't necessarily have faith in their roster. I know Sixers fans will say, well, they're a hell of a team. I was just talking about this with Michael Pina of Sports Illustrated in an upcoming episode that we'll publish on Monday. But, or rather Tuesday, I'm sorry, because Sunday's game will lead to a recap that you'll hear on Monday, and then late Monday night or early Tuesday morning, you'll be able to hear my conversation with Michael about Bam, the Heat, the playoff chances, etc. But we talked about whether or not Miami should be upset or afraid of any of the top three teams in the Eastern Conference, and we both agreed that no, there's no reason for them. Like, yes, there might be more talent on all of those teams than Miami, but I don't think that Miami should certainly have any kind of level of fear against the Sixers or even against the Nets, despite the fact that they are more talented, but just because they're so inconsistent. We don't know what's going to happen with the rest of that roster. We don't know what's going to happen if they're going to be healthy during the series, and on and on and on. There's lots of points that skew in Miami's favor. But as far as the Sixers matchup, look, Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons might be great individual players, but I don't trust their capacity to step up big in these huge moments. We have not seen that from them. And this is a team that's not necessarily built for postseason success. They're built for the regular season. They've achieved in the regular season numerous times over the last few seasons and floundered in the postseason. Their best chance, when they transition from Ben Simmons at point guard to Jimmy Butler as their primary playmaker, and they almost were able to knock off the eventual world champion Toronto Raptors. That was their best chance. Last year, first round exit, that was embarrassing. They were swept out. They just looked bad. And yes, they had injury issues and things of that sort. What team doesn't? I imagine that the Sixers will probably feel pretty good about themselves, but I still think of them as better on paper than they are in reality, especially in a postseason series. And I think Miami would match up well with them. I think there's the personal issues at stake here. I think Bam and Embiid would be a classic battle. I think Ariza and Simmons would be a fine matchup too. It would be a very interesting series. All of these would be fantastic, but I think the Sixers one is the one that Miami would probably fare best against. I would say Heat in five, maybe six against the Sixers. Now, the Bucks are second right now. They're tied with the Brooklyn Nets at 43-24 as I'm recording this. And I don't like the Bucks matchup at all. I think this is actually the matchup that's worse for Miami. Strange to say, right? I mean, yes, we have the blueprint for shutting down Giannis Antetokounmpo. But I don't think this team is limited to just Antetokounmpo anymore. Like, we're kind of, we're doing this thing now as an NBA fandom or community at large where we've dismissed what the Bucks do because of their lack of postseason success. It's, I think, short-sighted, it's narrow-minded, and myopic, right? I just don't think that you can dismiss what this team does. If I'm, and at the same time, I'm saying that the Sixers are a successful team during the regular season, and I don't have any faith in their chances at the regular season. I think you look at the Bucks and the way they're currently constructed, and I do like their chances a little bit better. The Jrue Holiday addition has been a good one for them. And I think he presents a lot of problems for Miami's backcourt. If you have Victor Oladipo out there and healthy, I'm not as concerned. But that's not going to be the case. And given that it's not going to be the case, then I don't necessarily like that favor. I don't like that. I don't favor that matchup from the Heat. They'd have to do a lot there. And I don't know whether or not Miami's bench is going to be able to step up against Milwaukee's improved depth. And their depth has improved, you know. It's going to be a heck of a series. I just, if I had to guess, and I'm guessing on all these series, I think this one would probably go seven, and it might skew in Milwaukee's favor. Just assuming, no Oladipo, and given Miami's inconsistency over the course of the regular season, I think this is not the ideal matchup for the Heat. Conversely, against the Nets, I think the Heat win that one pretty easily. Well, maybe not easily. I think they beat Brooklyn in six games. So Heat in five over the Sixers, Heat in six over the Nets, Bucks in seven over Miami. If the series started today with no Victor Oladipo and the roster currently playing the way it is, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Right now, we're all looking forward to the playoffs. It's which is a weird, long regular season. And so much has happened, and it just feels like it's been nonstop since the end of last season, since the start of the Orlando bubble, really. I mean, that was in July. Teams reported to Orlando in the bubble in July, and here we are now in May. And it feels like it hasn't stopped. I know it certainly hasn't for me. I didn't have much of a break during the Orlando bubble, nor during the offseason. You know, eight teams didn't even report to Orlando. A bunch of teams were eliminated early on. There was not a lot to cover as far as the hiatus is concerned. And now we're looking at this team and we're looking at what they're able to accomplish. And I think there's optimism. There's reason for optimism there, in my feelings anyway. Well, we'll see what happens. I think the two games against Brooklyn and the Heat look ready. And I think they have the right mindset and how they'll be approaching those. So it's going to be a very, very, not only is it crucial, but it's going to be a telling series. And so many moments have felt like they've had added significance throughout the course of the season. Like I feel like I've made this point a lot that this is going to be a defining point or this is going to be a key moment here. And it has been. Like we've been able to tell a lot about this team from how they respond in certain moments. Even if it's for the worse. Like if they don't respond the way that we'd like them to, at least that's saying something. That's telling a part of the picture that they are somewhat inconsistent, which is where I think most people stand regarding Miami, at least from the periphery, from the outside. If you're watching this Heat team and you're watching them kind of struggle with the play-in tournament and the eighth seed and they're kind of flirting with disaster a little bit, you might say to yourself, well, they're not a very good team. But I think they just kind of play down a little bit. I don't think they're interested in winning the regular season. I don't think it matters to them. In a way that we've heard LeBron James talk for years about, I don't care if we're the one seed, the two seed, just get me into the playoffs. I think Jimmy actually believes that. He doesn't give a damn about seeding. I think he just wants to be able to go. He likes his chances against any individual player or any team when they're in an actual series matchup. That's the kind of edge Miami has that Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and I think Milwaukee does not have. I just like Jimmy's mindset over anything. Look, Kevin Durant is a proven NBA champ, but Kyrie Irving is too. James Harden, that's a big question mark, not only because of his health, but because of his overall attitude, because of his ability to step up in the biggest games of his career. Now, he doesn't have to as much as he has once. He doesn't have to be the primary focus that he has been in years past. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. I keep saying that, but it's the truth. They really are. The playoffs right around the corner. Unbelievable. And I'll be covering them just as well as I ever have for you all. So just always make sure you follow this podcast. And you can always reach out to me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat. You can always send me a direct message as well. A special thanks to all of our sponsors for supporting the show. And a special thanks to all of you. This is David Ramil signing off for now.